Welcome to the Black Sheep Believers podcast. Hi, I'm Jess.
And I'm Alicia.
Have you ever felt like you didn't belong?
A misfit, outcast?
Too loud, or even like a black sheep? Us too.
Yep. Black Sheep Believers is a podcast of honest conversations for those seeking, questioning, and deepening their relationship with Jesus.
So let's have the hard but real conversations around feeling misunderstood and misplaced, but feeling fully accepted by the God that created us. Welcome home, Black Sheep. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Black Sheep Believers Podcast. I am your co-host, Jess.
Hi, I'm Alicia.
Yeah. And today we just decided, let's give people a little yap.
A little chat.
A little yap and chat. And so we have just like a few fun things that we're going to talk about. But it's going to be a lighter. It's like Black Sheep Believers Light.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the diet version, because we're not trying to just make every conversation so heavy, you know, because she and I, we are deep wells. We really like to go down deep, but we are also silly gooses, are we not?
Yeah, I also don't know how many times that we've, like, met people, and it's been like, hey, can I sit here? And then within, like, 5 minutes, we're like, so let's, can I?
Right.
Like, it goes, like, where we're going there on.
No,
always.
Right.
And we forever. That's one of the things that I love about you, and that I've connected with you. But I also feel like that's just when, that's just kind of like how we have created like our friendship, and
yeah,
how we create new friendships.
Sure.
And that's one of the reasons why I think that we can do this, is because I like messy parts. I like fun. I like all those things, and I think like Jesus loves that too.
Jesus was a good time.
Oh, I know. If Jesus was here today, you'd ride a Harley.
You think so?
For sure.
God. Okay.
He would ride a Harley. He would be like, he would be the, I mean, he is the coolest guy, but like, I think that he's funny. And I think that, you know, he likes to talk about fun things and beautiful things and admire God's creation.
That's right.
It doesn't always have to be this like serious, like,
yeah,
although I love those parts too.
And then he drops those mic moments, and he spends hours, you know, teaching on the Sermon on the Mount. But he also was like known as like a possible glutton because of how much he just got down with the people.
Mm-hmm.
He just got down with the people, you know.
Everybody.
And when Alicia and I show up somewhere, as long as her tism and my ADHD don't get too great, and then we end up like I need to regulate.
Risen with the tism.
We also, you know, can make people chuckle, which is really fun.
Yeah.
We were just talking before we, well, I guess we did film this. We did capture this, but it was before our intro. We talked about a fun collection that Alicia has, and a fun activity that her and her husband like to do at weddings. Can you unpack for us just a fun, silly little habit? That little,
it's
a
not
little
silly. It's part of my life's work.
Do not dim my life.
It's like, well, you know that I love Dolly, and like,
pardon, Dolly Parton.
Here's the thing. So I wear wigs. I don't know if you guys know this. I wear wigs. I wear hair extensions. I wear all the things. Like, God did not bless me with naturally great hair, because he knew if I had good hair and could do math, I would be too powerful.
Okay.
You know?
It's the thorn in your side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I have experimented with wigs, I don't know, since I started bodybuilding. Because when you do bodybuilding, like, you want to be full drag when you're up there, because you're up on stage and you're,
sure,
like a complete, you're like, head to toe, you look like a carrot. You are the shade of a carrot, okay? And then on top of that, you're under these lights and you're sweating and everything. So when you do bodybuilding, you wear extensions or you wear wigs because it looks better on stage. And then you also do very, very heavy makeup. And I have always kind of had fun with it. And so even though I stopped bodybuilding, my drag didn't stop. And it, you know. So I would say I have over 30 wigs, which now saying that out loud feels slightly excessive.
You think?
You think, but then
you never know. You never know.
You just don't know when that 28th wig is the exact wig. Yeah, and my husband and I have so many, and I have such a variety because, well, when we get invited to weddings, we wait till the end of the wedding. This isn't like a first hour of the reception type.
Right. This isn't like the cha-cha when, slide at the beginning to get
married. No, this is like
first.
Yeah, it's on. Yeah. That's when we know it's our cue. And we always bring a bag of wigs. And sometimes we have a tambourine. We've had streamers before. That was too much. But yeah, we just slowly disperse them through the wedding. We don't say anything. We don't like make an announcement. You just drop them at tables. And before you know it, it's the best party ever. And I know that we've been invited to weddings just because of that.
No way.
Not because we're actually like that.
That close.
Well, yeah.
They're like, okay, so we got to invite Aunt Susie. We got to invite the Wilsons because...
Don't send the Wilsons. Bye. So what wig are you going to put on later?
Gosh, well, here's the thing, guys. I've never put a wig on. Never. I don't remember putting on a wig. I don't have it. And that doesn't mean that I haven't worn a wig. It's just that my memory left me when I made babies. So there might have been a day way, way in the past that I did, but if I put on a wig today, musical theater Jess is about to pop off. It's going to pop off.
You were born for this.
I was made to recreate another version of me when I put a wig on. A new me. It'll come out.
Okay, I think we need to go blonde.
Okay.
And then I have, oh my gosh, Tawny. I have Tawny for you. She's going to be great. Don't worry. We're going to post all of this to social media. By the way, if you're not following, it's at Black Sheep Believers Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And we'll see you. Jess meets Tawny. What? That's such a 90s name, by the way.
Tawny. No, I don't know. Topanga.
What was that?
Women's World.
Classic.
Class.
Have you showed your kids all the 90s?
Okay, I'm so glad you asked me this. No, not Boy Meets World. But the other day, well, 1 week, I just decided, let's indoctrinate my children let's indoctrinate my children in the Mighty Ducks trilogy. The Flying V. I want you to know, when you show an 8-year-old the goofiness of Mighty Ducks, it makes them, it ignites all of their energy.
Mm.
It's
same.
So lit. Same. Like, my 10-year-old absolutely loved every single second of all three movies. And then my son's kindergarten teacher sends me a video. And it's just like a piece of paper that she's filming, but you can hear my 5-year-old singing, "We are the champions." And it's because of D2. It is because of Mighty Ducks 2.
Raising them right. Raising them right.
I was so proud. He also said, no. Wait, what does he say? Not no law. No La Palooza. Because we
it's the champs.
No La Paloozas, guys. That's what he thought it said. It's now not. He's learned because we listened to the video and his brothers corrected him, like, always. You know, I basically don't want my children to ever learn the right way to say words. Because it's so adorable when they say finger, T-H, finger, instead of finger. Like, that to me is, like, so cute.
Have I ever told you about finger?
No.
So, my youngest had an obsession, he has an obsession with hands.
Okay.
Hands are his thing. And he loved Daddy Finger.
Okay.
That one. So he had like all these hand puppets and everything, and he would get upset because he couldn't like grab things while he was doing it. So, anyways, I ordered this. It was a mannequin hand that's cut off. You know, like when they do, like when you go in to get like your nails done.
Yeah.
And I just ordered one of those.
Are you kidding? You ordered a hand for your kids.
Yes, and his name was Finga Finga, and Finga Finga went everywhere with us. He went to the grocery store, And even we would be, so my son likes to hang things out the window too. And so he would hang Finga out the door as we were driving. And Finga, he's over Finga, but Finga happened for a solid 8 months.
Wow.
And he just went everywhere. And I have pictures of all the places that Finga went on a journey. I should make like a little book.
You should make a photo book of Finga.
I still have one. You know what? We'll bring Finga for the next episode.
Next episode. We'll be great. And anytime we're like mic drop, we just give a high five. Yeah. Or we just like act like we're giving fist bumps, but to Finga.
Well,
that's a good one.
She's pretty dead set. This is her brand. She doesn't bend.
She just puts a stiff hand.
We do need guidelines. That escalated so quickly. No lo pulusa, Finga. Just, you wrote down some questions.
Okay.
That we were supposed to answer.
Yeah. Supposed to, only like loosely. But I am about to hit a new decade this year. My next birthday, I will have a 4 at the beginning of my age. I will be 40. I don't know why I had to say it, like why I had to break it down like that, but I remember when I started, you know, when I got a 2 at the beginning of my age, I was just like, oh my gosh, look at my bad self, you know? Mm-hmm. And then when I hit my 30s, I remember distinctly wanting to leave some really bad habits behind, like some mindsets or opinions or, you know, just things that I thought weren't going to fit me very well, meant my mindsets that weren't going to fit me very well in my 30s. So that's kind of how I perceived it. So, yeah, I'm about to hit 40. And I actually really loved my 30s. Last few years were extremely hard. But the years before that, 30 was rocket. I mean, like, at that point, there was a lot of established, like, life, you know, milestones that were hit in my 30s, and for many people that they can resonate with that too. There were also things that didn't matter as much anymore in my 30s that mattered in my 20s. I would say that probably happens in every decade, but certainly for me. And then I also felt just, like, more comfortable in the skin I was in. 30s, you know, I just kind of felt like, well, this is what I got, and that's all right. So I'm about to hit 40, and I got a lot of months. Like, I just turned 39, so, like, I've got time to figure out what this next decade is going to look for me. So I just figured, what is one thing that you don't want to bring with you into the next decade? When that comes for you, which will be in a couple of years. What are you going to leave in your 30s and not bring into your 40s?
You know, I really feel like the end of my 30s, I've really just, kind of like you said, I've been getting it together, and it makes me really excited for my 40s to not feel the need to build these massive expectations for myself.
Whoa.
I feel like in my 30s, it was such a season of planting in so many ways.
Yeah.
I think my 40s are going to be a season of harvesting. I'm hoping for it. And also, you know, I think the only way that happened, because, you know, I am a recovering perfectionist. I'm a recovering workaholic. 2 years ago, I was, you know, working 80 hours a week, running multiple companies, did multiple businesses for myself and, you know, with my husband. And, you know, when I met Jesus, one of the first things, when I first met Jesus, I used to always pray, and I would pray this just over and over and over again, is, Lord, I just want to be close to you. How do I get close to you?
Yeah.
And the answer always came back, die to yourself. And, you know, me and my, like, naive baby Christian mind, I was like, okay, what does that mean? And one of the first things was, he really put on my heart to, you know, quit my company, quit all of these companies, pour into my family, and be a stay-at-home mom. And so that was, like, something that was not on my bingo card as mid-30s. I feel like I felt like my company was just starting to get to a place that I felt like it was accomplished and I had done something with it. And you know, Jesus was like, no, like, this is where I want you. This is where your family needs you. And so I think the only way that I could go into my 40s without these massive expectations is the contentment that Jesus has given me with that calling. And that's not the first thing. That was like the first thing I had to do to die to myself. Like, we're still, we're still dying to ourselves every single day because I had a lot of that to do to get close to Him. But yeah, I think for me, to wrap that up, it's I want to bring contentment. And I am not naturally a content person. Jesus allows me to be a content person. And I'm so thankful for that because, you know, when He put that on my heart and I actually stepped into that act of obedience, everything changed. I realized that, like, yes, I had a good marriage, and yes, I was a good mom, but now I have this ability to be a great mom and a great wife and a great friend. And I have all this time that I can invest into relationships and into real substance in my life. That it's not that I never tried to do that, but I just was occupied with all these expectations of different things that I think were my calling. And Jesus was like, no, die to that. I have something better for you. And if you're obedient, you'll get to see it. And now, almost in my 40s, I'm like, this is the good stuff.
And it's simple.
What about you?
You know, I love everything you just said. The death to self, I think, is a big hang-up for a lot of people, the idea of dying to yourself. I would say 3 years, you know, Alicia, 3 years ago would have heard that and probably recoiled.
For sure.
Right? But what I love that you just said was the actual dying to yourself is the release of expectations, the release of the effort and performance aspect of living. And there are some, like, really true, fundamentally, like, healthy things about dying to certain desires, expectations, that sort of thing, that I don't think that makes sense to people without the Holy Spirit. Like, I do think that that is an otherworld kind of philosophy that will cause people that might be listening today to maybe, bristle up a little bit. Like, you're dying to yourself, which means that you're now, you know, in possibly bound to something, another set of rules. And honestly, that's true. But those rules actually lead to a simple life that has its challenges, but a simpler way of living where you can really focus on the most important things.
Yes, and I think what also happens is to be in harmony, to actually intercede, like, the blessings that God has for you and the plan that God has for you, there has to be total surrender.
Yes.
And while you're surrendering, that does not mean that you're doing it gracefully.
Right.
I know that while I was surrendering just on that specific thing, I was not doing it gracefully. I had been a working mom my entire time of motherhood. I didn't know how to be a stay-at-home mom. There were so many things that I had to surrender to every day and just trust, like, Lord, you would not put this on my heart if you did not have something better prepared for me. I'm surrendering. I'm not doing it gracefully. But my intention is here and my focus is on you. And guess what? Because I didn't surrender gracefully and because it wasn't this easy, smooth transition, I became closer to the Lord in the process.
Girl.
So it's like it's layered, right? And that's why surrender is very hard to achieve.
That's right.
But also, if you could hold on to that, if you can just hold on and just, like, focus yourself on Him,
yes,
you'll get to the other side before you even know. And there's moments that I'll just be, like, going about my day, and I'm like, wow, I really enjoyed this.
Right.
I really love this little slice of life. Like, and I'll just be like, thank you, Jesus. Like, thank you for like allowing me to stumble into something great that you have, because that's what I did. But I still made the choice, like, I'm going to be obedient, but I'm going to stumble into this. It's hard. And it's something that you think it's just like a one moment thing, but no, it's every single day deciding, you know, like all this stuff that I don't know how to do, but for whatever reason, like that's what's crazy. That's what's like crazy about the Holy Spirit. You will have no idea why you are called to do something, but you'll know that like you need to do this.
Yeah.
But anyways,
you're still so- You're so cute. No, man, I could hear you jump back up all the time. It's so cute. I identify with that almost 100%. Everything that you just said, I walked through very similar things. I had a 14-year career feeling very successful in it, feeling like I had a level of control over what was considered success, and I had a handle on that, and I was in an influential role, and I was bringing in income, which allowed for me to feel the freedom to make financial decisions independent of my husband. That is for real. Because I brought in income. And so I could go to the store and do what I wanted. And, you know, obviously, that's something that I definitely don't bring into my 40s. It's just a better handle on consumption. You know, not just, like, get better with money, but, like, understand consumption and the root of why I want to consume. I want to get better at that. But back to like the last 3 years, I went from feeling my worth was in production, like it was in what I was able to accomplish, and then COVID just caused some real major chronic pain. And once I left my career, my body decided to like really reveal what was happening in it. You know, like I wasn't on living off of the adrenaline of waking up every day and going to work. And so then my body, once I settled into having no expectations on me in the day, other than, you know, taking care of my little guy, once the boys were at school, it was extremely clear to me that I had to die to my identity. The identity that I built for myself that said I needed to be productive to be worthy of love, that I needed to be successful for love, to be loved, that I needed to be influential to be loved.
Ooh, that one.
Yeah, that I needed to, offer someone some value to receive love. And there were days where all I could do was, like, stand at the counter for 15 minutes and do the dishes, and my husband would come home from work, and I was like, I earned your paycheck today by doing the dishes. And he just would get so mad, like, babe, you did not have to do anything to receive my love and for me to provide for you. And it was very painful. It was a very, very painful experience for me in that season where I just had to say, my worth and my value is decided by the God who created the universe. And if he can dress the lilies and he can feed the sparrows, then he can love me laying in bed for 8 hours a day during the day and not producing anything. And I really had to erode a lot of paradigms in myself and in what I considered worthy. And then I was able to get around and to be a mom and stay at home. And it took me, 2 years to tell people that I was staying home as a mom. So like I would say things like, I'm a freelance life coach. Because I was life coaching. I was just doing it for my best. Right. I got certified in a few things so that I can like work with teens. I did some like content consulting, and I did some freelance writing. And so I was able to like make excuses that in the 3 hours in a physical day, you know, or in a week, I was able to do a little bit of work. And that's what I would tell people that I did, instead of like, I was present for my kids. And I'll tell you, being a mom at every age is really gratifying. And so I have found myself taking so much delight in saying that I still love my kids. And so anyway, I understand everything that you just said because of how I navigated my transition from going into a career and working full-time to being a stay-at-home mom. I also believed that what I was doing in ministry was more important than being a stay-at-home mom. And so I felt like it was and I'm not like blaming anybody else for the way that I felt about that, but I really felt like my job was more important than being a stay-at-home mom. And so it was a demotion to stay home.
What's interesting about what you said there, I totally resonate with, but there's been like layers of choosing to not work and stay at home that have revealed a lot of things.
Sure.
And you mentioned the financial piece of not feeling like you were contributing to your household. That was extremely hard for me because I was raised by a very hyper-independent woman who, I don't think she ever like purposely tried to do this, but you know, she instilled a lot of great things through that, like how to be hardworking, how to be independent, how to depend on yourself. Those are great things to have. But she also kind of instilled this narrative of like, you cannot trust anyone to take care of you. You are the only one who can take care of you.
Yeah.
And something that was revealed to me when I was unable to feel like I was financially contributing to my family, at first, it was like really terrifying, really uncomfortable. But then it slowly started to reveal that it was forcing me to communicate with my husband more.
Yeah.
It was forcing me to allow him to lead in places that he never got to lead before.
Because, wow.
You know, it wasn't that I was like trying to be like, well, I make money too, so you can't. Like, it wasn't anything like that.
Right.
But it was just, there was forced dependence. And that was a good thing.
Wow.
For me.
Yes.
Because it allowed me to not just get closer to Jesus, but get closer to my husband.
Wow.
Because there wasn't this, I kind of got robbed of that false security that financially contributing gave me.
Yes.
And so that was like a layer that got revealed. And then I used to do the same thing where people would kind of come to me and they're like, so you just stay at home now? Like, what are you going to do? And I remember I didn't have, like, an answer in that moment.
Right.
And I would just be like, no. And I never felt, like, ashamed about it. But it definitely took me a while to find it empowering because now, like, I can answer that. I can be like, whatever we need and whatever we want to do.
Right.
Like, what a freedom in that. And then the same thing, too. You know, I was sitting there and I was, like, praying to Jesus every single night. How do I get close to you? And he was like, when are you going to have the time?
Exactly.
And staying at home allowed me to have more time with my relationship with Jesus, with my husband, with my children, with my friends, all these things. And so it's kind of like a layered thing, but I definitely resonate with that, that first year, really, I just couldn't believe that I'm like, is this me? Is this who I am?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally. I would say anytime any of my friends have major transitions, whether it's, you know, I'm transitioning from one job to another, or transitioning from being single to dating, dating to marriage to babies, one career to another career, any transition, literally any. What I tell my friends is that it's going to take longer to recalibrate than you think. It's just going to take longer to recalibrate than you think. Recalibrate new rhythms. There's this really cool, I've since forgotten his name because I don't teach on this as much anymore. But there is a life cycle of team development, and if you Wikipedia that, you'll find out who came up with this. This is Jess's interpretation of somebody else's content. It's the stages of team development, and it's true for each person. We go through all these different stages of development, and we feel very overwhelmed when we hit a stage without language for that stage. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you what those stages are really quickly. The first one is forming. That's just like when you join a team and you meet people on your team. Hi, my name is so-and-so. Where are you from? so nice to meet you. There's pleasantries involved, but you haven't started working together yet. You're just forming. In the same way that you walk into any new transition, you're just kind of getting the lay of the land, you know? And oftentimes, you're not seeing the real, like, intensity or the chaos of what you just walked in. So it's, like, brand new. But then you get into a season where you're very conscious of how competent you are. And that's when you enter the stage of storming. Usually there's light levels of conflict or tension in this season because things are moving quickly and you're still learning. And a lot of times we're more tired in this season. We feel very overwhelmed. We wonder if we'll ever get good at what we're doing, right? And so we go through this season where we are consciously incompetent. Storming. You're just storming. My mother-in-law teaches on this as well. She's the one who talked to me. And when I start to explain to her how I'm feeling about something, it's usually when I say words like I feel overwhelmed and I'm so tired and, you know, there's just a lot of new stuff. She's like, babe, you're storming.
Yeah.
Like, oh, duh.
I love that.
It's good language, right? And it just, like, puts you at ease to know that, like, this is organic. This is fundamentally part of starting something new. And then you go through...
Yeah, that tension can be less powerful.
Yes.
Less identified.
Exactly. Like, the moment that you have language for it, you're like, okay. But also, like, it normalizes the fact that when you first start something or you first transition into something, it will feel like you don't know what you're doing. And you also won't feel like you're an expert at it. And you'll think, like, will I ever get good at this? But good news, you do something every single day that you were completely novice at one point that you thought maybe you could never do it. And you're sitting in a porcelain chair to dispense waste.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
That did not come naturally to you, babe. Someone had to teach you how to do that. And now you're a pro at it.
Yeah. Plus, there's something to be said for trying to do hard things well.
Yeah.
Is so incredibly difficult.
It takes time.
It's so incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
I love that though.
Okay. Then once you get into the season of storming, usually like in a work setting, you'll like know how to access certain, once you get into the next phase, you start knowing like, this is where I go to get the information I need and I can, you know, troubleshoot the things that someone else has taught me so far. You go through a season where you are consciously competent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you're norming. That's when, like, you don't feel, the chaos doesn't feel as scary to you. That tension is starting to subside a little bit. Not that there isn't tension there, but how you perceive it will change because you will feel more comfortable, you know, going into the patterns and the rhythms that are necessary for that season. But then eventually you're like anticipating chaos. You're anticipating needs. You start to perfect systems. You change systems, right? When you walk into that season, you go into a season of performing. So storming, you're consciously incompetent. You're norming when you're consciously competent. And then you're performing when you're unconsciously competent.
Yeah.
When you're just going through the, I mean, you were just like pivoting quickly and troubleshooting quickly and able to make adjustments on the fly, and the chaos never goes away. It doesn't matter where you work, what transition it is. There's going to be levels of chaos that your body is going to experience every day, but how you interact with that chaos will change the more reps you get and the more comfortable you are. And so I think what you and I experienced are all of those phases. We just described them in a very personal way.
I like how you did it, though.
Oh, well, thanks. It's not mine. Remember, it's somebody else's. Somebody whose name I forget.
And, you know, tension is a good thing.
Totally.
We live in a culture that is terrifying to be uncomfortable, even for a moment.
Yes.
People don't realize that, like, in order for things to get cleared, they have to come to the surface. And that can be applied to your health.
That's right.
That can be applied to relationships,
right.
Interpersonal, whatever it is. Like, without the tension, there is no clearing.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just a status quo existence in this life. And it's okay. Sometimes you have seasons of status quo. I've had a tremendous amount of healing in a status quo season.
Right.
But for the most part, almost anyone who's trying to accomplish anything on any level, like, you have to expect tension, because also if you don't work through that, like, there is no real substantial gratitude towards
Whoa.
It.
Whoa.
And so it's necessary. Yeah. And I don't know how many times I've had to tell myself when I'm like in the moment about ready to freak out, like, this is necessary. The gratitude that you're going to feel for that, it's necessary to feel that. Or you can just use the wise old saying that my dad says, which is, if you're going to go after Moby Dick, you better bring tarp sauce.
What does that mean?
Means if you're going to go after the big thing, you might as well bring something that makes it easy to swallow as you're trying
yes.
to take it.
Wow, that's
yeah.
good. That's He's, good. That's a hillbilly
right there.
It's a hillbilly. What's his name?
Okay, so this...
What do you, what's he go by?
So, my family's from West Virginia.
Okay.
We can go down a total rabbit hole. There was a documentary made by John Knoxville about my family. It's pretty crazy. But,
like for real?
Yeah. It's called The Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia.
And that's your actual family?
That's my actual family. They're extended family.
Sure, sure, sure.
We won't... Okay, we'll go into it a little bit. Do we have time? We'll go into it a little bit. Okay, so... My family came over, and they settled in West Virginia in the holler. Okay, we're talking like holler. Okay, and this was during the American, Revolution. American Revolution. And my family was so crazy, and they were fighting so much, they were literally killing each other. And the West Virginia government stepped in, and they said, I can't look at your face while you tell the story. She's like slowly reeling like who she's actually like sitting across from now. Okay, so West Virginia military comes in and they forcefully separate my family because we're so wild. People are mistaking our internal family fights for battles.
No.
So half of the whites get moved to Logan County. Half of the whites get moved to Boone County. Anyways... Fast forward.
Are you Logan County or Boone County?
I am Logan. We're considered the upper echelon of the whites, which means nothing other than we probably got a Walmart. Maybe a Piggly Wiggly. That's really it. I also have a little more camo pants today.
You have a library of wigs.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, no roads, where we're going. Hang with me, we're almost there. I have my second cousin, Uncle Jesse, okay? He is a famous tap dancer because in the holler, it's called clogging.
Clogging.
Okay.
Ryan Gosling does it in Notebook.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, it can be cool. Anyways, he's world famous, right? Well, he murders his wife for how she made his eggs. And he went to prison. And so he's got this, like, wild, random following. And Johnny Knoxville came across his story and was like, I gotta make a documentary about this guy. So he goes and starts following, you know, my second cousin. And then realizes this whole family is so crazy. I have to make an entire documentary about it. So there is a documentary about my extended family. And... now, if you ever watch that, me giving the tartar sauce advice would make a lot of sense.
Makes a lot
it
of sense.
It would make a lot of sense. Weird side quest that we went on. But yeah, that's, I am like full hillbilly redneck genetics. The fact that we're here is kind of wild, but you shouldn't meet my dad's today. You would absolutely love
it. What do you call?
Diddy.
She calls him Diddy.
Because, oh yeah, that's the whole reason why I went down this road, because that's what you call, which Diddy didn't age well. I can't change my dad's name, right? Like, that's what he's been, and like, my kids call him
No Puff. Relation to.
No relation to Sean P. Diddy. Puff Daddy. Diddy. Combs. Yeah, and my kids call him Papa Diddy. So what am I going to do?
No!
Yeah, so anyways.
Diddy.
What's the other question?
Moving on.
What's the other question that we have? Because I don't think anyone could take any more of that.
No. That was too much for me.
And which said something. No, I'm just kidding. That's wonderful. I just love Jesus can use anybody. That's what, that's the point of that message, that Jesus can use anybody. If he can pluck Alicia out of the collar.
The collar?
What's it called?
The collar.
The collar. First time I've heard that word. See, I'm sorry.
Field trip. We're going on a field trip. I'm going to pack my wigs. We're going to West Virginia.
We're going to the holler.
Holler.
What is one habit that you want to continue into the next decade?
You kick this one.
All right. So I would say, I don't think I really answered the first one, what I want to get rid of. I would say, I'll just say, the thing that I want to stop doing and then start doing are kind of the same, two sides of the same point. I have found this year a revelation on how I perceive people. And I have found myself having more compassion for the brokenness that I see in the people closest to me. And I've also recognize that, like, for everybody that I like want to be really frustrated and mad at, that there's humanity in them that I can hold space for. And so I've just had to forgive a lot of people, and that's because of me. I mean, some of it is like not so great things that have happened to me because I'm a human being and I exist in this world, and so people can rule or mean, you know, perceive me incorrectly or whatever. But in the, you know, series of time that I had just to lay in bed for 2 years, I found myself really asking the Lord to bring healing in my heart towards people from my past. And he was really kind to do that. And there's this whole process about how I went about it in a very spiritual way, where I brought these people, each person respectively, and the grievances I have towards these people, I brought them to Jesus, and I've experienced radical transformation and forgiveness for these people that I, you know, feel like in some ways never earned or deserved the forgiveness that I, through the power of Jesus, have been able to give them. Nor have I expected them to do anything in return, right? Like, I've just released them through forgiveness and have moved on. And many of them have no clue, right? And none of them have ever asked for it, which is, you know, something that Jesus does. He just teaches you how to forgive, because he had to forgive me, and he's really good at it. So what I want to do moving into my 40s is to just hold a little bit more space for people's humanity. I want to be quick to receive truth and wisdom from anybody, no matter how much I disagree with them or dislike them. You know, because I mean, like, some people are still sandpaper to me. It's not like I'm going to be everybody's friend, but I want to hold space for truth to reveal itself however God designs it, even from the most obscure places. And I also want to be quick to quick agree with people that I really, really like, but that I can sift the truth even from people that I, you know, admire and trust a lot, and have the discernment to say, I might admire and trust you a lot, and I want to believe that everything you say is true, but you're still human. And so it's okay that you're wrong. It's okay that you're human. And those that I dislike, I want to be able to say, that's a really fair point, and I appreciate that. I think if we carry that space, if we hold space for people of all different perspectives, I think we can build the unity that we want to see in the world. And I just want to get better at that. I just want to get better at that. And so I want to have more compassion for the people that rub me the wrong way. And I want to find truth from anywhere.
That's so good, Jess. I feel like that's so the opposite of where a lot of people are at in their current culture. So what does that look like in, like, a practical way for you?
Sure. I would say I have been practicing this for a bit. But I would say the most common thing is, okay, so I had, like, an altercation with a gal who didn't like how I parked in the parking lot of the kids' school. Okay, it's silly. It was like a really, really petty moment between this mom, who I don't know, and her frustration with me. And it immediately, like, presented, like, my reaction to it, like, charged my adrenaline. Like, my adrenaline went up because I looked over and a woman was yelling at me for where I parked, which was in a spot.
Just pick up drop-offs.
Oh, man, it gets real crazy. It's a very scary world out there, guys, in elementary school parking lots. But anyway, so I remember, like I got in the car and I was, like, starting to get mad and wanting to have those, like, I'm going to talk to myself, but to her, you know? Like, I'm going to reenact that moment and, like, come up with all these clever things that I could say to that person.
Oh, I love doing that in the shower.
I really, or like right before bed. For whatever reason, I fight all my battles before bed to myself.
Yeah, ooh, that was so good.
So good. I'm gonna call her. No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, so I but then I just like paused and I regulated my body. And I just went to the Lord and I was like, God, that woman was having a bad day. And that does not have anything to do. Help me to just pray for that woman and to move on. Now, I did spill that gossip to the girls at pickup, right? Like, I've got girlfriends that I would sit with, and we definitely rehashed it out. But that was more for, like, how silly of that, you know? And obviously, I should probably repent for that. But what I'm saying is, in the moment where I could have let that person's anger charge me and then, like, impact the rest of my day, I just paused. And I just went to the Lord with it. And I just talked to the Lord until my body was calm. Mm-hmm. And I had something else to think about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think I've learned this from a friend of mine and from her counselor, right? So, like, we learn so many counseling things from somebody else. But there's power in pause. There's so much power. If we could just, right before we say something, pause and vet we're about to say or do, I think a lot of things would be different.
I totally agree. I do something kind of similar with the pods, but I actually learned this from a cognitive behavior therapy book that I read a long time ago. But this author was talking about how anytime she interacts with someone where they do something that annoys her or aggravates her or like rubs her the wrong way, she stops and she says to herself, yeah, me too. Because there's never a day that you weren't aggravating to someone else at some point, or that you weren't annoying to someone else at some point.
So good.
And so that reminder of we are the same.
Yeah.
And if someone can possibly, like, forgive me for my transgressions, why can't they do the same thing? And now I totally get what you're saying, though, about having time for not just your mind to take a pause, but for your body.
Yes.
Because there's so many times you're walking around where you're like, your mind's like, it's neutral, right? But your body is so hypertonic and it's so
yes.
And,
yeah.
You know, there's also a really great saying for Diddy.
Your Diddy.
My Diddy. If the devil can't make you mean, he'll make you busy.
Whoa.
And so when you are busy, when your body is busy, it doesn't allow you that time to allow God to interject.
Totally.
Because you're just, you know,
yeah.
All the time. But I love that.
That's so good. What advice would you... Oh, wait, what's your thing that you're going to bring into your next session? What's one habit you either want to develop or continue into your next decade?
I am disciplined in a totally different way, and I want to bring that in. I used to be very disciplined with how I suffered. I actually, like, loved it. That's why I excelled in the fitness industry, because I could be disciplined with food. I could be disciplined with workout. I could be no days off. Like, I'm very good at discipline / self-punishing. Very good at it. Now I am disciplined in a totally different way, which is the things that I am very intentional about keeping in my day and just keeping part of my schedule are things that breathe life into other things. So, for example...
That is so good.
Well, But, I mean, because sometimes I feel like discipline is, people don't really understand what it is. It's a very extreme thing, right? Like discipline can be a very balanced thing. Like, three things that I literally have to do every single day. And if I do this, it is guaranteed that I will have a better day than I probably was going to have. Is at some point in time, I have quiet time with Jesus, whether that's, I prefer just to be like reading and like in his word. And sometimes it's a Bible, sometimes it's a book, sometimes it's whatever, but just quiet time for my mind, my body, everything to actually just take down a second. The second thing is that I always, this is going to sound crazy, I eat sitting down. I take time to eat a meal. Not like eating throughout the day, like going to the next thing or whatever, because once again, it's mindfulness that allows me to stop and actually look and be present in my day.
Wow.
So quiet time with Jesus, sitting down to eat a meal, and then some sort of activity every single day. And it's not the discipline that it has to be a workout and it has to be 2 hours of this. And if it's not all of this, then it was worthless. No. It's just move your body in a way that you enjoy. So that's what I would like to bring with me is, I'll call it discipline with substance. That's what I'm going to call it.
Substantive discipline.
I can't even say that. ST.
I really hope there isn't something naughty out there that's appreciated.
You can also Google it, though.
Please don't. Don't Google that. We cannot guarantee the safety of that.
Okay, I have a question. I don't think this is written down.
Okay.
What's something new that you want to learn in this new
Man.
High level and just, like, low level.
Okay. I want to get better at reading for fun. It's never been a thing. I dealt with comprehension issues my entire life, and then in my career I was really forced to learn how to read thoroughly, and I was also diagnosed with ADHD, and so that really explained a whole lot, but I still am not in the habit of reading for pleasure, like just reading for fun, and that's been really frustrating to me, because I really feel like it's such a powerful pastime, and it's such a great way of just keeping your mind engaged, that I just don't do. So I want to just get better at reading. I also have very vivid dreams. I've been exploring. It's been like a red bull that I've gone down recently. Like, why do I have such vivid dreams every night? And they're random. I mean, there are times where I deal with like night terrors, and it's always precedenting some like big Jesus thing that's about to come. So I feel like Joseph in that way, that has these like really vivid dreams, and sometimes it's deja vu, and, you know, years from now. But a lot of times it's just my brain is hyperly active at night. And some of my research indicated that my dreams, the vividness of my dreams is a result of my creativity. I did not perceive myself as being very creative. Well, thanks. But that wasn't like how I perceived myself growing up. I was, you know, there were other characteristics that I think kind of expressed themselves. Now, as a grown-up, I have flexed that. But I don't think I've exercised as much creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to learn more things that exercise my creative outlet. Read more and then utilize my creativity more. So maybe learning an instrument or learning a new skill, learning a language, something like that.
Like, see, like the violin.
Oh, that's so funny. I did play the cello for 1 year. I was really bad at it. And I, like, banged it on every... I was, like, reckless with it. It wasn't mine, it was a school. And I was just, like, banging on stuff. I only knew how to make, like, the foghorn sound, like that. Yeah, but I want to learn, like, guitar or piano or something. Like, I did play the piano growing up. Like, I went to lessons, but I wasn't very good. So, anyway, those are some ideas. I would also say, and we've talked about whether or not I was ever going to bring this up, but I'm going to talk about it.
It could be a lot.
This is just getting so vulnerable.
I'm holding on right now because it could
you
be
don't
a lot
know.
Of things.
That could be a lot of things, but it's actually like, okay. So I was telling you about chronic pain, right, y'all? And because I dealt with chronic pain, I had to find medications to help me offset that chronic pain. So I found a medication. That medication's side effects is weight gain. And I put on a bunch of weight because of the medicine. And, like, I was working out, and I had a fairly healthy diet, and I was, like, loaded all the time. And yeah, just my metabolism shut down, actually shut down because of this medicine. I've not been on it for almost a year, and I'm still trying to, you know, stimulate my metabolism. I'm still trying to figure out how to get back to looking how I feel and what I perceive is what I am supposed to look like. And so I'm having this really strange, dumb relationship with my body where I'm more self-conscious than I want to be at 39 years old. Like, at this point, I want to feel fantastic in my skin. And I like the personality that I've worked on, that the Lord has birthed in me, that I really feel very confident in some ways and very insecure in others. And so I'm just navigating, what does it look like to, and my goal isn't just for physical vanity purposes. I want to be extremely healthy for my adult children. Like, I want, when they are adults, for me to be capable of doing whatever it is they want to do, whether it's vacationing or taking care of grandchildren or adventuring in some way. Like, I want to be healthy for my adult children. It's a major goal of mine in life. And I really feel like this decade is the one where I'm going to, you know, chip at that iceberg of figuring out what optimal health for Jess is like.
Can I ask you a really personal question?
Duh.
Okay. Well, I have two things here. Oh. Is one, have you ever sat down and maybe, you know, interpersonally, like, made a list or wrote it down, but have you ever just asked your body if it wants to release what you want it to release? Have you ever just, like, sat down and, like, had, like, a personal conversation with your body?
Never. I didn't know I was supposed to.
I would start there.
Okay.
I would start there.
I also read...
Not that I'm giving you advice, but I feel like there's this... A lot of times there's a disconnect. And working with thousands of women over, like, 15 years is we are so kind to our friends and we're so kind to the people that we know. And the second that they're going through something unexpected or hard, we're like, how are you doing? What's going on? But we never ever reciprocate that to our own bodies.
Wow.
And ask ourselves that. Sometimes that's a really great place to, like, start with just being in harmony with your body.
Yes.
Before you go on to the next whatever it is.
Because
I think you are a very, very self-aware person. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you're at all, like, self-involved. Because it kind of gets a bad rep. Sorry. I'm just laying it out there.
But I don't even know what that means. What does self-involved mean?
Involved with how your body feels. How your body thinks. Even to the extent of, I remember when I was postpartum, my second time around, I had a really traumatic birth, and I was having a really hard time, postpartum-wise, just bouncing back, whatever, and I sat down, and I wrote a note to myself, and I asked my body, how did it feel to have that operation? How did it feel to carry a child for 9 months? And it's being self-involved enough to get even a pulse of what your body, what our bodies go through.
Wow.
Every day. And,
wow.
as women, they go through the most intense periods of life.
Yeah.
But because of how our society kind of deems the pace, we're like, oh, we carry a baby for 9 months, and then 6 weeks later, we bounce back mentally, physically, you know, emotionally, everything. And no, like the female body is considered postpartum up to 7 years after giving birth.
Wow.
We get it 6 weeks.
Right.
So I just wanted to breathe that into you, friend.
So good.
That I want you to just, like, get a little self-involved with, like, what's going on in there? What is that relationship? Like, start a relationship with your body.
So good. And I do think that it can be hyper-spiritual as well, right?
Yes.
Okay, so Dallas Willard, in his book, Renovation of the Heart, describes the physical act of... of devoting your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. That's in Romans chapter 12. It talks about like letting your bodies be human sacrifices, and not in the like put it on the altar kind of way, but he talks about that being a physical act where you start at a body part and you work your way completely through your whole body and intentionally offer it up to God as a sacrifice and give that part of your body to him. And so I think there could be a really beautiful spiritual experience in that, where you just invite the Lord to help him or help me illuminate what my body is telling me. And that becomes part of what Romans 12 says about offering your bodies as a living sacrifice. So I love that.
Self-involved.
He so deeply.
He cares about the big things and he cares about the little things, and he cares about something as simple as, Lord, I feel like I'm in a body that's holding me back from the light that you're putting in front of me.
Yes.
He cares about that.
Right.
But for whatever reason, we kind of skip over it in our prayers and in our relationship with him, that we can ask him things like that.
Yeah.
We can ask him to reveal things like that, or give us wisdom, or give us discernment.
Yeah.
Good service.
Right. So good. Thank you. Thanks for saying that. That's a good friend. She's a good friend, guys.
I think that we've talked about this before, but never really talked about it on the podcast, but I think you sharing that is not only like, yeah, it's vulnerable, but it's also, it's encouraging, it's brave, and it's relatable. What woman, especially 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever, hasn't had that since?
Right.
And so I think you sharing that, because it's a good conversation, and it's one that I feel stuck in, and
right.
You know, I can only go off of my experience as someone who specifically worked with women and worked on every single layer of in terms of relationship with their body. It is complex, and most of the time it's not a operational thing. It's not a, this is how you eat and this is how you do this and, you know, make sure you take these supplements. Most of the time when I saw women really start to break through and have a really good relationship with their body is when they started actually having a relationship with their body.
Wow.
And having body awareness. So thanks for letting me give you unsolicited advice.
Man, you just have the open door. Just doors unlocked. Come on in.
I also don't have any more, like, ditty wisdome pieces. So
no.
We're saying.
No. That's good. Okay, what about you? What do you want to bring into? Did you already answer? What do you want to
bring into? I assume you want to learn.
Oh, what do I want to learn? What do you want to learn?
So, I love to learn and I love to try new things.
Yeah, totally.
Most of my friends joke, they're like, you've been like 18 different people.
Yeah.
I will forever.
You relate to Taylor Swift more than you know.
She does not like her. Well, I'm not a billionaire. I am not a 37-year-old woman cosplaying a 22-year-old. Or wait, what is it? 22? Yeah.
He's still.
Actually, I'm going to stop.
She wrote it in 22.
She's still cosplaying.
You stop. I'm so sorry.
And she looks 22. She looks amazing.
She does.
She looks amazing. But I'm like, honey, we in our 30s. We in our 30s now. I need you to look, give me the 30s energy, because it's awesome. It's awesome. All of it is awesome. Right? Sorry.
That was low-hanging fruit I had picked.
Okay. So yeah, I like to learn new things. Right now, okay, these are my three things. There's roller derby auditions. I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
Okay, I've already thought about roller derby name.
Okay, what is it?
I don't know. I'm still working on it. Okay. But Smashley Simpson. Or Babe Ruth List. He's still working on it. Okay. So.
Both are just.
Second one is polo. I've ridden horses my entire life.
Yeah.
I love riding horses. I had to take a break on it, but I have an opportunity to go back and learn how to play polo with one of my friends.
Fun.
So that's something that I've thought about doing. I hope these were supposed to be like really like deep.
You don't have to. They don't.
Okay, and the third thing is I want to make sourdough.
Me too. Let's do that together. Now I did live in the polo capital of the world. Like I grew up there.
Is Chicago?
No. Oh, sorry. I lived in South Florida.
Okay, I was like.
No. No, Chicago is known for other things.
Well, would you come to the polo matches?
Yeah, but I used to go to polo matches for Easter.
To go to the polo matches so my friends can come to the polo matches.
No, I for real watched polo matches every Easter with my family. That's what we did. They are really cool.
So fun.
In fact, the princess, England's princess, came and played polo in my hometown. Yeah. Lots of famous people. And the oldest one.
See, I think Harry's the cute one.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. I'm glad you were like, the same group. Okay.
You got a thing for redheads, I know. Just kidding.
Yeah,
she's redhead. Get it?
I think, yeah. I think, here's the thing. I used, my husband jokes that it's impossible for me to have a hobby. That once I start something, that production mindset comes in, and I'm like, ooh, I have to be good at this. I have to learn everything about this. I get very, very obsessive very, very quickly.
Yeah.
I'm also learning not to apologize about that, about myself, because, like, sure. I've got to do really cool things that are, like, totally off the wall that people are like, why did you do that? I was like, I don't know. I just randomly got obsessed with it one day. Maybe it's autism. I don't know. But either way, it's led me, like, really cool places in life. But so that's, with this, something that I'm trying to work on is to let things just be a hobby.
Just a loose affiliation.
Don't have to produce anything from it. Have anything to show for it. It's the same reason, like, I recently got into thrifting. I just like it. And so I'm learning as I get older that it's okay to do things.
Yeah.
Just because you like it and it's silly and it makes you happy and who cares? Like, who cares? But for the record, I wanted to do roller derby for a very long time. So I feel like I was paid for roller derby.
You know, I got that energy too.
Would you do it with me?
I don't think so.
Would you? Okay, if I did it, would you do a roller racks?
I would go roller skating.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
If that's what you mean. Yeah. No, my fight or flight response is too strong, and I will not be someone that I like if I do roller derby. That's me.
But that's why you're perfect.
That is why I should.
It's an appropriate place. It's an appropriate place to be off of those.
But
things.
I would bring it off. Like, I don't know that I can, like, shut off that fight or flight.
I could see you, like, totally, like, bulldozing someone and being like, Jesus loves you.
Exactly.
What
I also, yeah, so I don't. I just, I'm the competitor in me. I just need to find the right. I would love to do some sort of like intramural sport. I miss sports. I would like to do that.
Yeah.
Like volleyball or like
co-ed softball.
Blast. Okay, what's one advice you would give somebody 10 years younger than you? And then we gotta wrap this up. Yeah, we gotta wrap this up.
Do not cut your hair after a breakup or a major life event.
Great advice.
Solid one. And if you have to, cut bangs. They're the fastest thing you'll grow back.
Okay.
Second thing is that when you are choosing a partner, remember that you are not just choosing a partner for who you are right now, but also who you're going to become. And also, it's not just for you. It's also for, like, the life that you're going to create. And there's so many times that I don't know how I got it right. But I look at not just, like, who my husband is to me, but who he is to our children, who he is to my family, who he is to my friends.
Right.
And so I think that's really good advice that I didn't follow for a very long time in my life. I was just choosing a partner for how they made me feel right now in this moment, which was normally very fleeting. There wasn't a lot of substance to that. Somehow I got it right. And I think the word for that, because when you're young, you really have these blinders on, and you can't see past what is just right now.
Yeah.
And it gets so much better. And it gets so good. And it also gets hard. And it also gets messy.
Yeah,
but, totally. Like, I mean, if you think back to, like, 20-year-old Jess, the things that you were worried about, and now, like, fast forward, you're like, oh, honey, you're not even going to remember that. So
100%.
So that would be another thing that I would give advice to myself 10 years ago is don't just put merit in things that are right now, but look at how they're, you know, going to impact your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially.
So good.
And then probably my last piece of advice would be you don't forgive people because you have to, because it's the right thing to do. You can and you should, but you can also just forget people because it's for you. Mm. And that's something in my 30s and probably in my 40s that I will be working on, is forgiving someone not because they asked for it or because we're going to be able to continue a relationship or have a positive thing really come out of it, but forgiving someone because I want that for myself.
Yeah.
I want to carry around that heaviness of not forgiving someone. And that is something that that's just been, like, really beautifully, like, put on my heart, like, from Jesus, is what forgiveness is about. And I've never been able to pull that out by myself. But with Jesus, I have a lot of hope that I can forgive things that I never thought possible.
Yeah.
And so that would be advice to my younger self or
love
to
it.
Anyone younger,
yeah.
is that, like, forgiveness is not always just going to come from, like, okay, you've given me the validation and now I'm going to forgive you. Sometimes forgiveness can just be that you don't want to carry that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to forgive that other person because you want that for yourself. You want that peace for yourself.
So you? Good. Those are all great pieces of advice. Yeah, in terms of marriage, I mean, we're both still rookies at marriage. Like, how long have you guys been married? 10 years? Okay, we'll celebrate 12 this year. Rookies. Like, that's still very early.
Isn't it crazy how it feels like hardly any time at all, but also, like,
our whole life?
Yeah.
100%. Okay, so despite being rookies at being both parents and spouses, I would say your wedding is not nearly as important as you're putting it, making it. It's not. We had a great wedding. 600 people. I mean, like, it was a big wedding. I know, stupid. I don't want to talk about it.
Only people have those problems.
Yeah, no. Only pastors who can't create a guest list have those problems. Yeah. So, and I love that we did it the way that we did. We did it a lot simpler than a lot of other people. I would make it even more simple now. On this side, that I put so much stock and effort into capturing specific moments so that people could think that I'm trendy more than the substance of, like, I wish I spent double the amount on premarital counseling than on the wedding vigil.
Ooh, yeah.
Right? So I would say just whatever stock you currently have in the details of your wedding, just dial it back a little bit. And make the day super meaningful and not just aesthetic first. Second, I saw this with a guy on Instagram. I don't even know his name. He's bald, he's got glasses, and he looks very small. And he said the other day,
this is the requirement.
I know, that's all he's got to do. It's true. He said that the lasting marriages out there are not passionate, but companionship. The two people don't just have passion, they have, like, a companionship. And that is something really powerful about great marriages. Every single lasting, happy marriage that I know, and they all have challenges, and they all have hard years. You know, Luke and I like to say that we've been married almost 12 years. It's the best 8 years of our life, but not consecutively. We got that from another couple from our early years married. But the marriages that I know that have lasted and have sustained without having disdain for one another, those couples are really great partners. They're just really great friends. And so if you're looking down the barrel at another person right now and you're trying to decide if that person is you, are they a great friend? Mm-hmm. Are they a great co-laborer? Are they great at being friends with people other than you? Those are like really important. It's a quality that I see in my dude, and it's definitely a quality I see in Ryan. He is a loyal, great friend. And yeah, my dude is as well. So that would be advice in that regard. And then I would also say that nobody cares. You're putting on that outfit today. You're second guessing it. Let me tell you, people are too busy thinking about them to be thinking about you. They are too busy thinking about whether or not you like what they wear more than they like. They're paying attention to what you wear. And the people that care a lot really should get a hobby. So just give yourself a break. Just give yourself a break. Wear the comfy. Go with comfy over excessive. Like 6 out of 10 days, would you say? Just like give yourself a break. And give yourself a break not to be lazy or gluttonous or whatever. But like people, the amount of pressure we put on ourselves to be a certain version of us for other people is disproportionate to the amount of actual effort that it should take to just be yourself.
That's awesome advice. And also, most of the time, whatever feedback you are getting from others, it's usually just a projection of how they feel themselves.
But
it takes you into your 30s or 40s to trust that.
Right?
That's really, really solid advice. Yeah. I like that. What's in there? Because that was like, I don't know. It's just going to get weird.
We're going to take it down.
It's going to get weird. 100%. That was a good yap sesh, though.
Hey, if Finga was here, I would turn her upside down. Is it a boy or a girl? Here. But let's hold our hands like she does.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
That's kind of satisfying in a weird way.
I really like
it. We'll bring Finga on here.
Finga.
Sometime soon.
And we'll have to decide what pronoun to use. Girl or boy, you think?
Whenever I'm feeling.
Right.
Oh my God. Honestly, I'm just going to say I'm really proud of this because our first yap sesh with no guidelines, we did so well. It could have went so many ways. I thought we kept it pretty good.
I did too.
And if you guys like this kind of, not that we're unscripted, but this kind of chatted up yap session, please let us know.
Yeah.
We are, you know, this is literally our first time doing this. We are doing it with you as we go. And yeah. So we love to hear feedback and we want to have the conversations that you're wanting to have. So please feel free. You can connect with us through our website, blacksheepleaders.com.
Yeah.
You can also DM us, comment, whatever. We won't miss one. So definitely let us know what you guys want us to.
That's right. Thank you so much for joining us this episode of Blacksheep Believers Podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.